There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, and glad to have you along. Easy to get in touch with us as well, 251-343-0106 for a call or a text, same number, 251-343-0106, or with the FM Talk 106.5 app, which is like a digital multi-tool like a Leatherman. You can do all kinds of stuff with it. One of the things you can do is leave us a talkback message. If you press that microphone icon on the front page, lets you record a message, emails it to the show, and I can play it back here on the air. All right, very excited to talk to this man. And it was last week I started talking about this story. And somebody texted and said, you seem excited. Are you trying to get the guy on the show? And at that point, I was already trying to get the guy on the show. That guy is Director of Public Relations and Outreach for Banding Coalition of the Americas, Kyle Shepherd, one of us, but we're checking in with him in Alaska right now. Kyle, thanks for your work.
Absolutely, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, let's start. So you're Baldwin County guy, but you are now a little bit north of there.
I am currently way up in the southern coast of Alaska, right at the northwestern extent of the Rufus Hummingbird Breeding Range, doing some tracking work up here that I'm sure we'll get into. And it's been really amazing so far.
Yeah, and to get everybody, if you don't know the story, you'll remember this from last week when I Kyle tells us about it. So there's a transmitter goes on a hummingbird in Lillian, in Baldwin County, and then it's picked up where?
So that bird overwintered in Lillian, so it spent the entire winter there. And then from there, it moved due west across Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, dipped into northern Mexico until it hit the Pacific. And then it basically rode the west coast all the way north through California, Oregon, Washington, through British Columbia. And our last ping on that bird, that he was traveling at least 32 miles an hour through Juneau, and then disappeared into the wilderness somewhere north of Juneau.
It is absolutely jaw-dropping. Obviously, people pay attention to this stuff, understand migrations and hummingbirds, whether it's migrators. But from Lillian to Juneau, and not even taking a 45-degree angle to go that far over to the west and then the whole way up, it's just stunning to me. I mean, you know, if you had waterfowl doing it, it's one thing, and others, but I know they can fly fast around my yard, but my gosh, those little wings and that distance?
Yeah, it's truly incredible, and these birds have the ability to pack on an extreme amount of fat and increase their muscle mass to burn that over long flights, and then they'll settle down for a couple days, rebuild some of that muscle, pack on a little more fat, and pick up and go again. So that bird from Lillian to Juneau made that trip in 38 days.
It's unbelievable. I wondered that track, as you watch this, you know, I think about waterfowl migrations, right? They fatten up, they make the migration, but they do pit stop, you know, in places to get, you know, whether it be invertebrates or grains or whatever, to get more energy to move on. Hummingbirds, kind of specific to what they like to eat, right? Could you map that and say, okay, there are things they can eat along the way on that track?
There are. So hummingbirds' diets are roughly 70% small, soft-bodied insects and spiders. So for the most part, they're following the flower bloom. Some precede the flower bloom and sort of have the bloom chase them on their way north, and they're just gleaning insects the whole way. And of course, feeders aid that a little bit as well. But they will also follow other birds like sapsuckers and feed from sap wells drilled into trees that attract bugs as well.
Well, but they use those, but you're saying they have like a concurrent migration. They follow those knowing that those food sources are going to be available?
It's most of a timing thing. The timing of migration as far as the genetic component go is pretty hardwired. You can delay migration by a day or two based on weather, but these birds know where they're going and when they need to be there. So almost regardless of what's happening, besides big thunderstorms and stuff like that, these birds are pretty timely. So they're going to show up expecting that the resources will be there.
So they are completely photo period based. You can look at length of day and say, okay, they're getting ready to go.
Exactly. In fact, here, we just passed the solstice this past weekend I'm just south of Girdwood, Alaska. And that's the trigger for all of these male rufous to get out of Dodge. So all of the adult males that bred here will be gone in about 7 days.
Wait. They did that and they're getting ready to leave again?
They are. Yeah, they just got here 2 months ago. They bred and now it's time to get out of here.
I try to think the benefit too, to migrations. I mean, you look at, geese that go to the tundra, like a snow goose or something, obviously, or even, Canada geese, the reason they go to golf courses, they want these wide open tundra spaces where they can see predators and all that. But what does a hummingbird get by migrating that far? Why is it, what's the benefit to it to go up there?
Well, we think it's a trade-off between the amount of resources that are available and the competition around. So the further you go and you're stretching that range of where they will go, the less competition you have and potentially the more resources. So if you think about both ruby-throated and rufous hummingbirds migrating south to their wintering grounds, they're not only heading into a very resource-rich environment in Mexico and Central America, but they also have a lot of competition from all of the native species there, along with all of the other migrants that will overwinter there. And in the breeding season, there's just too much going on to be able to sustain that competition and resources during the breeding season.
We'll talk about, and come back to our hummingbirds here in Alabama, but let's, I keep saying, hey, you track this bird, it left Lillian, and it got to Alaska. The technology here is really something amazing to me. And if people go, I'll put the story back up on the Twitter feed, but y'all go look at the picture here of what y'all, these hummingbirds themselves are small. And so for a transmitter to look small in a hummingbird, talk about what do these things weigh? How big are they? How do you get them on a hummingbird?
Sure. So for reference, the average ruby-throated hummingbird is about 3 grams, which is just shy of the weight of a nickel. And the transmitters themselves have to be super small. So while all of the research that we're doing is permitted by the Bird Banding Lab, which is a federal entity housed under the USGS, and they have a hard limit of any attachment has to be equal to or less than 3% of a bird's body weight. So until 2 years ago, when these transmitters hit the market, we didn't have anything small enough to actually be able to track these birds long distance. But the transmitters we're using now were originally designed for monarchs, and they come in at a weight of 58 to 60 milligrams, or right about the size of a grain of rice. And for attaching them, we are basically using super glue gel and gluing them to the feathers on the back of a bird. And it doesn't hurt them in any way, but it's a way that we can collect short-term data over the course of a month or two, and then the birds will just shed those transmitters. So in part, we have to be very particular about when we put transmitters on and the kind of data that we want to collect, because we may not get a really long-term deployment. Challenge other than just dealing with...
Do they have regular bolting? I mean, do you worry about that? Like, okay, they're, if attached to this feather, I sure hope they don't molt these feathers right now or they don't drop that feather. I mean, is there a time of year? Is this the time of year that they keep them on?
So they're going to start doing a full body molt during fall migration. So for ruby throats on the East Coast, come September, October, they're all going to look pretty ratty. And they're going through that molt in that period. And as soon as they molt the feathers that the transmitter's glued to, it's going to come off too. And that's a big challenge that we're facing in collecting the southbound migration data.
And the power here, I mean, getting these things so small, it used to be, okay, how do you battery power? You can think about from all kind of animals that have been collared and tracked into that. But this doesn't have a battery, right? I mean, it's using solar.
Correct, yeah. So batteries would make it far too heavy. So it is just a small solar panel that's charging a supercapacitor that will discharge roughly about every 3 seconds.
This stuff is so cool. If you're just joining us, like this guy who's living the life, Kyle Shepard, Director of Public Relations Outreach, Banding Coalition of the Americas, one of us, South Alabama guy, but up in Alaska right now working on this project. Let's talk about it back here at home. So Rufus, ruby-throated, give us, like, when I'm looking at hummingbirds, and you and I talked off the air, I run a bunch of feeders, when I'm watching those, what are those the two I'm going to see? Am I going to see anything else? What would be of note if I saw a certain species?
So what you're seeing right now is basically peak breeding season for ruby-throats in southern Alabama. And the twos and threes and fours that you're seeing right now are breeders local to the area. In another month and a half or so, you'll start to see a little bit of an increase or maybe a fall off as your breeders start to leave and the migrants start to arrive. And you may have noticed that those birds hanging out around your feeders are just chasing each other relentlessly.
Yep.
which is another interesting phenomenon. And basically, they don't know that that is a resource that they can't deplete as you continue to refill your feeders. So they just think they've found the holy grail of a flower, and they'll defend that to the bitter end until you get to a point in migration where there's just too many to chase off, and you're like, all right, I got to get this nectar while I can.
Yeah, you know, we Kyle's talking about off the air. I told him I left scratching my head when I've got all these feeders, and there's enough feeders for the hummingbirds, but they run each other. They leave one to go run the one off the other one. I'm like, guys, y'all, look, there's another one right there. But they're doing that right now. These are nesting now locally, right? And then they're going to shift change and leave and others will come in?
Yes. So we think that based on some prior research and some papers that have come out, that based on stable isotopes that you can get from feather samples, that our southeastern breeders are overwintering somewhere in Central America, Nicaragua to Costa Rica region, but we're not entirely sure yet.
Are those cutting the Gulf? You know, I mean, I've never seen the hummingbirds that I can remember, but I fish out in the Gulf a lot, and we've had, you know, birds come land on the boat and, you know, just exhausted, and we can, you know, water and stuff while they're there. But hummingbirds, are they following the coastline, or are they doing that Yucatan to Dolphin Island cut?
Well, so that's a fantastic question, and unfortunately one that I can't answer yet. We have the tech now to be able to answer that, but as far as actually collecting the data, we're still waiting on that portion of it. So in the spring, if you're standing on the beach anywhere in Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, you can see birds come the Gulf and settling down right into the sand dunes to recuperate over that long flight. And if they're coming from the Yucatan, last land on the Yucatan to first land on the northern Gulf Coast is about 600 miles on the nose. So if I was making that jaunt, I'd be tired too.
Yeah.
But as far as fall migration goes, we don't really have any idea. It seems like most other species have a tendency to do a circumgulf migration and just stay over land the whole way. And that's primarily caused because there's not the selective sexual pressure to get to your breeding ground to have the best site to breed. And when gotcha. They're southbound, they're just kind of lazy. They're moseying down there for a vacation. And they may not risk jumping the Gulf for that.
Just a couple questions before we wrap up. But, I mean, so many coming in. Number one, what months should we keep our feeders full?
So in Alabama, I would keep at least some sugar water in your feeders year-round. So besides ruby-throated hummingbirds, which are the only ones that will nest east of the Mississippi Plains, we will have other western hummingbirds that will overwinter in Alabama. If I get this number correct, I think we've had 13 documented species in the state over the past 50 years or so. But oftentimes we will have rufous hummingbirds as well as calliopes and black chins show up in coastal Alabama specifically and spend the entire winter with us.
This texture, how do they catch them to band them or put, I guess put transmitters? How do you catch them?
So we use a baited trap. So basically we have a feeder that they are using often and then a special trap with a drop door on it. So whenever they go into the feeder to feed, we can close the door and then get them out to band them at that point.
That's cool. I got to get to post some video up of that. I'd love to see that. Carl saying, wow, according to the track he described, that hummingbird might have stopped at our hummingbird-specific plants and feeders in Bon Secours. Yeah, what plants, too? I mean, you got a short list of, you know, versus me, you know, pouring it to them like I do in my feeders. What plants should I grow?
Well, they are extremely attracted to salvia, some coral plants, trumpet vine, and really in the winter, camellias, because they're packed full of insects. So the best advice that I could give on plants is to plant as native as you can, because that's what they're expecting historically to find whenever they show up in your yard.
It's good stuff. I've got probably another week's worth of questions for you, but we'll have to do that on a future show. In the meantime, people want to keep up with what you're doing. I'm fascinated. I've signed up and liked and followed and all that stuff, but where do people need to go?
Facebook is our most commonly updated place. So on Facebook, we're Banding Coalition of the Americas. And you can also find us on our website, bandingcoalition.org.
Good stuff. Keep up the great work. And yeah, when you get back to town, I want to come in and talk some more about hummingbirds with us on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks, Sean.
Hey, thank you, Cal. There you go. Man, how cool. How cool. And the Baldwin County guys banded them down here, Lillian, and then, you know, running around and getting in front of them up in Alaska. Yeah, we're going to get him back on. Kyle Shepherd, his name. He's with the Banding Coalition of the Americas, and we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Question from Chris in Orange Beach earlier in the show, and I didn't realize this would be a perfect timing. So Chris had asked, if y'all didn't hear, said, I have a very important question to ask the masses. That's all of us. I said, I've been living in the same place for the last 25 years. Is there something in the air or in the rain that's making the grass grow the way it is? I've never seen my grass grow this much in a week's time. Is it the La Nina effect, which I'll have to ask Dr. Bill about? But the getting rid of that grass that's growing and getting it cut down, well, that's the province of Dr. Blaine Price at Paris Tractor. Hey, Dr. Blaine.
Hey, Sean. How are you?
Good, man. Yeah, let's talk. I mean, we're always talking zero turns, but I mean, this, if somebody is looking at grass that could hide a small child in their yard right now, let's talk about what you have in stock.
So we got all of our Kubota zero turns in stock right now at Paris Tractor. They range from 42-inch deck up to our diesel 72-inch, all gas and diesel models in stock right now. So come by, see us. It's a great time. We've got all of them in stock, and take advantage of that low interest financing through Kubota.
Yeah, you talk about these zero turns. You and I both cut a lot of grass, and I know people out there listening cut a lot more grass than us, but cut a good bit. Is the deck size important, but also having, I can't use that ASS word, but having the butt to that engine to be able to cut it on the first pass. I mean, that's a big deal.
That's right. It is. It the deck means a lot, just to cut down your number of hours that you're out there like I am. But definitely the horsepower behind that engine, really cutting down that thick Bahia grass. Mm-hmm. These Kubota mowers, they do the job for sure.
Yeah, the Bahia grass. You're talking about grass that's out there. It's like I don't know what it, you're like. I just, you know, if you, I'm cutting you, but I got to cut you harder than everything else. That stuff is unreal.
It is for sure.
Hey, while we're talking about working in the yard too, I said this before Father's Day. I was giving people Father's Day gift ideas, but seriously, your steel handhelds. You had some early on when you and I first met, but then it started growing. People lost their desk space. Bear's Tractor.
That's right.
Everybody got compressed and more handhelds in there.
We have definitely lost footprint in our showroom just with all the steel shelving, because we've got a ton of steel products and gas powered and electric all in our showroom right now. Fully stocked on all that, from pressure washers to chainsaws, pole saws, weed eaters, hedge trimmers, you know, you name it, we've got it in gas and electric powered. So if you're in the market for any of those, maybe a gift idea, or if you just want to buy a whole set, we've got all that here in our showroom right now.
And speaking of what y'all got going, you and I talked a few times about rolling out from the rental. I mean, you had, what's Benny X's, skid steers, those things coming out?
Yeah, so we still got we've actually rolled out a couple more of our mini excavators. So if you're looking for something in that 3 to 5 ton size machine, we've got those with buckets and hydraulic thumbs on those. All been a part of our maintenance schedule here at our shop. So always been kept up to date and all. You can come by, see us, check them out, or you can check them on our website at ParrishTractor.com as well.
Good stuff, Blaine. We appreciate it. We'll check back with you soon.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, there goes Blaine, Dr. Blaine at Parrish Tractor. All right, I'll get to the text in a second. I do want to, I just put this up, I mean, it's just self-serving, but I put it up on the Twitter feed or the X feed because I do this. Yeah, so somebody was talking about, I think it was the end of Jeff's show yesterday, they're talking about consultants out there and why there shouldn't be like consultants to consultants, which I actually agreed with. I think it was Ultra Runner had said something like that. Like you could have the political consultants and then have some homeboys and girls here in Alabama that would vet that information. You know, I've offered that I would do that for news stations when it comes to the plants and animals of the state of Alabama that they seem to never get right. And I remember, I mean, you know, when they do the red snapper stories and they'd be showing like a queen snapper or, you know, a cabera or, I mean, something that's not a American red snapper, and say, hey, y'all need to change that picture. Got this one's over at Yellowhammer, and I don't know, Sherry Blevins is probably very nice, but this is where a lot of these websites will put up a press release and then do a story around it, which is fine. And the headline here, this is under their outdoors section at Yellowhammer News, Alabama Tourism will launch statewide catfish trail featuring more than 50 destinations. Now, you got my attention, because in the Mount Rushmore of stuff I like to eat, fried chicken. I'm a huge fried chicken fan, and fried catfish. Oh my gosh, I'm in when it's done properly. And I got my favorite places. But they said, so here's, you know, Alabama Tourism does, you know, we have different trails, right? Golf trails and farm trails, good, I don't know what other trails, wine trails, I don't know what we do, whiskey trails they do in the state. You can go to these different places. So Alabama Tourism says the Alabama Catfish Trail is designed to showcase the people, places, and traditions that define catfish in Alabama. Okay, remember these sentences here. It's important. The trail includes more than 50 catfish-related destinations and experiences across the state. Catfish experiences. Offering both recreational and culinary opportunities for residents and visitors. Says tourism officials say the initiative brings together voices from across Alabama's catfish industry while showcasing the industry's contribution to local communities and the state's economy. And it goes through the launch event and all these things. And by the way, too, you're wondering what places made the list. I don't have all 50 here, but it said number one on the list, one of my favorites, and the original, Anana Fly, Ezell's Catfish Camp, or just call it Ezell's, Old Greenbrier Restaurant, never been. The Ark and Catfish Navy, never been to those either, but they have a whole list of the places to go get great catfish in Alabama that's grown in Alabama. So all that being said, that's cool. I like it. Catfish Trail, you know, the picture, and if you go to at FM Talk 106.5 on X or Twitter, you'll see where I put it up. The picture that goes with the Alabama Catfish Trail. Alabama-grown catfish, raised on a farm-raised catfish in Alabama, or catfish that comes out the river, whether you do limb lines or jugs or hook and line, whatever, Alabama catfish. The picture of the catfish here is, and because I'm a fish nerd, I saw it the second I saw it, I said, oh, that's a red-tailed catfish from South America. That's what they used. A catfish that is like native to the Amazon River Basin is the picture they used to celebrate Alabama's catfish trail. Not a channel cat. Yellow cat would have been even cooler. But no, 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 a South American catfish. Just consulting business. I'm open to this. If you're gonna put a picture up, and about a story, and you're gonna just, it'll be, I could do it for like $5 a picture. Just send it to me. I'll say that is or not the thing you're talking about. But yes, this is South America, and there are a bunch of different catfish down there. But this is one of the ones that gets pretty big. You know, I mean, they like. Ours can get pretty big. These get pretty big down the Amazon. They get the red tail and some white striping on them. That's the picture that goes along with the Alabama catfish trail. somebody says, I've been catfishing. It ain't good. Yeah, well, you did. You did on that picture. That was something. I mean, I'm not saying the person there has to know everything about catfish, but you're going to put up this big story about the Alabama catfish trail. Let's just get one that's native to North America. Any of those would be fine. I'm not going to say, well, you know, you've got a blue cat. You should have had a channel. Just one that's here. All right. Back to the text here. Moz, didn't catch all the hummingbird conversation, but I enjoyed what I did hear. They used to come band in our yard during the winter and banded several rufous and black-chinned. That's very cool. So you're a hot spot enough that they band in your backyard. That's awesome. We've got, I don't know, you never know how many. I try to count how many we have right now. You don't know, because obviously they don't do a lot of sitting still. I think we probably have, right now as of yesterday afternoon, 4 or 5. But I do love the fact that, like I said to Kyle, and anybody who has hummingbird feeders can nod along with me, because you know this is the truth. You could have more hummingbird feeders than hummingbirds, and they can't stand it that the other one's on. Like, I go, hey, y'all, there's enough feeders for all y'all. Well, I'm gonna go run that one off this feeder, even though there's another feeder for me. Jim in Georgetown says, hummingbirds love trumpet, vine, and salvia. We've had ruby throats, rufous, and annas, all three in the same season. We love watching them. They are fun, man. Maybe I'm just in the old man portion of my life, but I sure do love watching them. All right, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, Talk 149, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. We'll get back to the text in a second here, but the story you heard updated there on our news, just tragedy here. The story from WKRG says a man has been charged with murder following the shooting death of another man, according to the Baldwin County Sheriff's Office. According to BCSO news release, deputies responded yesterday evening to a home on Manish Lane in Foley for reported shooting. When officers arrived, they found 55-year-old Robert Keith Barlow with a gunshot wound to his abdomen. Officers provided immediate aid until paramedics arrived. Barlow was taken to the hospital, where he later died. Joseph Lee Smith, 42, was detained while investigators conducted interviews and evidence. Investigators learned that Barlow and Smith were cousins and had gotten into an argument before Smith allegedly shot Barlow with a shotgun. Smith was arrested, charged with murder, taken to Baldwin County Jail, where he remains. And now you hear that it was over a Facebook post. Officers say the incident stemmed from an argument over a Facebook post. What the hell is wrong with people? You had the story a couple weeks ago about the people upset with the Yelp review, you know, for the ice cream shop. But at least that just was some blank talking and slapping a phone out of somebody's hand. I mean, we could all recover from that. I don't know what the Facebook post. I mean, it's social media. It's just sad. It's the argument. Cain and Abel, we've been killing each other forever. And arguments you hear, how many times we hear, argument took place outside of home, somebody shot somebody in that. But this is something posted on Facebook? I mean, we'll probably get more details on it, but it's depressing is what it is, for sure. Thank you. Tim and Foley said, Wallace Tunnel westbound just closed because traffic, it's closed to one lane. So Wallace Tunnel westbound, those of y'all that can't do this, that means if you're going from Spanish Fort to Mobile, you're going westbound. So Wallace Tunnel westbound just closed to one lane. So thank you for that update there. Michael said, yeah, I've never seen a hummingbird either. I think he means in the Gulf. So I don't think I have either. I've seen a lot of birds come land on the boat, but never a hummingbird there. But do see them around the house. Do love them. This is interesting. John said the grass may seem to be growing so quickly. So, Chris, listen. Grass may seem to be growing so quickly due to a process called primed acclimation. This is where a plant is stressed for a while, usually from drought. And when it finally rains, the plant jumps into a kind of overdrive. The plants will grow bigger and stronger and typically yield a much larger harvest. John, is that true? I mean, so monocots, you're saying that, is it just monocots or do dicots do that as well? Because I got a field of sunflowers that have just been, use a technical term here, they've been piddling because they've been so much rain. I'm hoping they get to grow in here. Matt says, oh, Lord, Ezel's, best catfish place ever. Ezel's fantastic. Yeah, the one there in that fly, but then they had one in Tuscaloosa. I know probably elsewhere, but they had one in town in Tuscaloosa. I don't know if that's still there. That was way back in the early 1990s when I was in Tuscaloosa. Chris is back, but he said there used to be a prison in Greensboro, Alabama, called the State Cattle Ranch. You know, that place they still got that facility, and they do youth-mentored hunts and all that stuff there. It's pretty cool. Said not only did they raise cattle, they raised a blank load of catfish ponds everywhere. Listen, Hale County, I mean, you could drive through it and see it, but, like, if you fly over, like, obviously parts of Dallas County, too, but at parts of Marengo, all that. But if you, Hale County, catfish ponds everywhere, which, by the way, too, I don't think any of those catfish ponds have a South American red-tailed catfish in them. I want you to go look at the story. It's just, like I said, I'm not even picking like they put a yellow cat in there and it should have been a channel, or they put a blue, no, it's species doesn't even exist in North America outside of like aquariums. Well, that's interesting. I would love to do this. Moz says, I could talk for hours about the catfish industry as well. My father was a leading fish disease specialist at Auburn from the late 1960s until his retirement in the early 2000s. Moz, send me an email. Let's book that. I would love that discussion. You know, and what's happened with locally raised catfish, right? The locally raised catfish, and then having trouble competing with stuff they're bringing in from Southeast Asia. You know, we think about, and good on Representative Brown, Chip Brown, what he's done about labeling and all that, and that helps also, we think, at least you can focus on it living where we do, about shrimp and saltwater species. But it's also important for farm-raised catfish in our state. Like, how is it that things are so upside down that a catfish-like fish can be raised in Southeast Asia and brought to the United States and be competitive pound for pound with what we're doing here? There's something wrong here, the state has the catfish trail. They're trying to do things to encourage that. I think that's great. But just, we got a bigger, got a big issue here. Bill says, I love watching hummingbirds. They are like little fighter jets. I have said the same thing, Bill. Important to keep hummingbird mixed, clean, and fresh. I see so many that leave them out for weeks. It's a real responsibility to feed hummingbirds for their benefit. Clean and replace mix no longer than 5 days. 3 is best, I say, skip the red dye, not necessary. Are people still selling the red dye? Like when I was a kid, that was the thing, the red dye hummingbird feeders. But, you know, like our feeders all have red on them anyways, like in the plastic or the metal. So he has it to attract them. So I don't run the red dye. Do I change every 3 days? I don't, Bill. So maybe it's a, maybe I need to do that. I don't change it every 3 days. Tim says, yes, the rain blew up all my tomatoes over water. Yo, they've been, as our buddy Bill Finch says, they're splitting their britches right and left. If it's not that, it's the stink bugs, right? That's why I'm harvesting. The tomatoes have still been, they're still trying to make a little bit here. If they show any kind of color other than deep green, they're coming in the house. Texture says on Highway 69 on the way to T-Town, they replaced cattle farming in the 80s. Yeah, absolutely. The catfish ponds. Yeah, Matt says they feed them poop in Asia. They feed them all kind of bad stuff. Their own stuff back into them and all that. Yeah. Which, by the way, side note, this will be probably for just my social media feed or whatever, but I am talking about things they raise in Asia. I'm doing the flip side. I'm raising tilapia here in Alabama now. So I'll let you know how it goes. Right now, I've pretty much been feeding blue herons, a couple different blue herons, and an alligator. So if any of them make it through to harvest size, I'll let y'all know about that. I feed them, and then I guess by default, I'm feeding the alligator and feeding the blue herons. Politics-wise, it's funny. B-Dark talked about not talk about politics for a while, which is, I'm very happy. I'd rather talk about hummingbirds a lot of days. But the political side of it, I mean, the story that got picked up yesterday, and I know we talked about it today on several shows on the station, the Trump endorsement out, so it's coming in here. So, Jerry Carl, Rhett Marcus both getting Trump endorsement. I guess at this point, you know, why wouldn't you? They're pretty much leading by a lot in AL1 and AL2. Also, it was interesting to hear, and I know Congressman Carl was on yesterday with Jeff, but had mentioned this some, to hear the support coming in from Senator Britt. And the behind the scenes, as much as I can say without having a little bit beyond hearsay, there was definitely a move by Senator Britt that was working against Jerry Carl, working for Rhett Marcus when they were both in the same district. But now, if you heard yesterday on Jeff's show, Jerry Carl said he's getting support now from Senator Britt, who's publicly supporting Jerry Carl in his bid. So not only the Trump endorsement, but who was working against him is now supporting him. And that's politics, y'all. Senator Britt now behind Jerry Carl. And with that, we'll turn you over to Paul Feinbaum. Do it again tomorrow. Big day. Cameron Smith joins us, Erica Thomas. And also, hey, while I'm on this this critter thing, all the discussion of ticks and tick-borne diseases, I've got a doctor on tomorrow to talk about ticks and tick-borne diseases. That's at 1 o'clock on tomorrow's show. All right, y'all have a great one.